Hello, my name is Dr. Talia Margajani, and this is the Good Mood Podcast. This is episode 60, and it's been a while since I've recorded an episode. I decided to do a solo episode this time because there's a pressing topic that I'd like to make a podcast about, just to inform everyone of their rights as patients in our healthcare system. It's also been a while because I broke my foot and, you know, it's been summertime. So my brother got married. So there's been some other things going on, but I really encourage you to check out the latest episode with Nicholas Hunley as we talk about how to raise healthy families. I've also been editing previous podcasts and I'm working through the entire repertoire just to improve the audio. So give everything a listen, especially episodes that you might have found difficult to listen to due to audio qualities, and let me know what you think. I really think that there's been a big difference in the audio quality. I'm also working on another course in my little side business, the Good Mood Project, on my online courses. So I'm working on a course for hormones, but right now there are several courses up. So go to learn.goodmoodproject.ca and you can get courses on nutrition for mental health, which is designed to be a 4-week little mini program that you can put yourself through, learning how to eat an anti-inflammatory diet, support your microbiome, support your brain health and cognitive health. There's a course that's sort of a passion project of mine on that sort of tackles two topics: metabolic health and body image and self-love. And that course is called You Weigh Less on the Moon. And so I really encourage you to check that out. It took me a long time to put that together. And I really think that this is a course that is meant to inform and fill in a lot of gaps that I see patients coming in with who are looking to either embrace their body, live healthfully, and are still stuck in this low calorie diet paradigm and are having a hard time digging their way out of it. Finally, there's also a course on food sensitivities. So again, I'm, you know, as a naturopath, food sensitivities are something that I often work with. And this course outlines the difference between an intolerance, an allergy, and a food sensitivity. It goes through the science behind food sensitivities. So things like leaky gut and inflammation and why having an issue with a food might cause something like migraines or depression. It outlines a famous case study and it describes, you know, how you might go about picking out foods and, you know, different elimination diets that are in popular media, as well as some recipes and some tips on how to move forward. It also outlines the low FODMAP diet, which has been really an important tool in my practice. So I'm recommending that course to patients when we're talking about food sensitivities. It's not something I do with every patient I see, and I'm always hesitant to remove foods from people. I'd rather add than remove. As I think most people from a Chinese medicine perspective, if you think of people on a continuum of excess and deficiency, I think most of my patient population is probably in a state of deficiency. And so I don't want to take more things away from them, but very often it's appropriate and it's something that I will always discuss with patients. And so I think this course is a great resource to dive into the food sensitivity piece and just be informed on what it might mean and how to move forward with it and to gain a little bit more support that's difficult to get in just a 1-hour visit. So we are at episode 60, and this is a very important topic. I've also written an article on it on my blog. I'm also trying to do more writing, something that I did a lot when I was in school, when I was a new practitioner, and I've moved away from writing on my blog. So I'm back trying to put my thoughts on paper or in word form. So today's episode's called Informed Consent, Your Right to Bodily Autonomy. I'm going to start this episode with a quote. "The right to determine what shall or shall not be done with one's own body and to be free from non-consensual medical treatment is a right deeply rooted in Canadian common law. The right underlines the doctrine of informed consent." With very limited exceptions, such as emergency use or incapacity, every person's body is considered inviolate, and accordingly, every competent adult has the right to be free from unwanted medical treatment. The fact that serious risks or consequences may result from a refusal of medical treatment does not vitiate the right of medical self-determination. The doctrine of informed consent ensures the freedom of individuals to make choices about their medical care. It is the patient, not the physician or others, who ultimately must decide if treatment, any treatment, is to be administered. This is a quote from Justice Robbins of the Ontario Court of Appeal. So I deeply believe that the key to optimal health has something to do with one taking full responsibility and accepting all personal power for one's own health. And this doesn't mean that there are not socioeconomic and sociological determinants of health. Of course not. But while we're being made aware of some of these environmental factors, I want to try and empower my patients as much as possible. And sometimes I fear that this might look like that I'm not really emphasizing the importance or what I feel the benefit of certain treatments might be, because I really want to avoid pressuring my patients and I really want to give them space and power to make decisions for themselves, whether it's something as simple as taking magnesium or as complicated as I mentioned in the intro, removing a food like gluten. And so, you know, I want patients to be able to really sit back and feel if they resonate with certain treatment advice I'm giving. And if somebody hasn't followed advice, I encourage them to come back so we can discuss it, because very often what I find is, you know, I'm the conveyor, I'm the vessel through which this advice flows. But oftentimes, I mean, I don't know everything. No medical professional knows everything. And a patient is ultimately the expert on their own health and their own experience. And so if a patient comes back and says, you know, I didn't take the magnesium you recommended, it just didn't feel right for some reason, I get curious about that. And, you know, we have a busy and overloaded healthcare system. And even well-meaning professionals can find themselves hurriedly having a conversation in which they're not properly informing patients of the risks and benefits or alternatives to treatment that they're recommending. So I really think for many patients, you know, being at the center of your own health might involve doing research, educating yourself, or assembling a team of trusted health professionals with you, the patient, at the center. It's like you've employed and outsourced a team to help you. I have had patients come in and tell me stories of, you know, being hurriedly scheduled for surgeries that they weren't sure they wanted, maybe shamed for refusing certain treatments, pressured into things that are life-changing like hysterectomies, or even long-term treatments or drug plans that with risks that they didn't fully understand. And when they read later on some of these risks, didn't feel like they were fully informed. Patients put on medications that have a very common risk of withdrawal effects, and therefore it's not easy to come off certain medications, and patients weren't informed of this either. On the other hand, I've also had patients in my care make sort of perplexing choices in the name of their own care. And these were choices that I didn't necessarily agree with. And I really felt like I had to keep making sure that they understood what they were deciding. So things like foregoing conventional cancer testing, screening, and even treatment in some cases. However, one thing is clear. It's the duty of the healthcare provider to provide advice and to be informed about, you know, what treatments to recommend, what our guidelines are, what the research shows, and to convey that information without bias. That's difficult. We all have bias, but if we can, we should be also informing patients of our bias, especially when it's obvious, like, you know, trying to recommend a supplement that you're selling. But it's also the right of every patient to accept or reject that advice. And so in light of recent very disturbing events that have been circulating on the media, coming out of the mouths of certain politicians, I started posting some straight up facts on Canadian law and informed consent on places like Instagram and Facebook, with no mention of what exactly I'm referring to. And these posts have been met with a lot of surprise. Like, many people were not aware of their rights to refuse certain medical treatments. They were not aware of their rights to be informed of the risks. And they were not allowed of their rights to be, or they were not aware of their rights to be allowed to make a free choice, free of pressure or coercion. Many people express feeling backed into a corner and unaware that they're protected by the Canadian Constitution. And so, despite it being deeply enshrined in Canadian law, many patients are not aware of their right to full bodily integrity, autonomy, and choice when it comes to their health. So I decided to just lay it all out in this episode. So since 1980, the Supreme Court of Canada made it the right of every patient to be given full informed consent before any medical procedure. This includes things like taking blood, giving an injection or vaccination, performing a physical examination, exposing the patient to radiation for the purpose of treatment, or like something like an X-ray or a mammogram, and so on. The underlying principle is the right of a patient to decide what, if anything, should be done with his or her body, is a quote from the famous Supreme Court case of Hopp versus Lepp. Every health professional under the Regulated Health Professions Act, including naturopathic doctors, but physicians, nurses, anyone who's regulated, anyone who has a license number, billing code, any professional, including naturopathic doctors, has a duty to uphold informed consent. We are well versed in it. We are trained in it. We've taken examinations in it. We have to hold continuing education in it. We're required to uphold it, to document it with every patient interaction, and to maintain it with every patient we see. So informed consent is not binding. We need to obtain it after every visit. And when I'm outlining some of the principles of informed consent, you might think, like, I'm not sure if, we have these conversations. A lot of the time, they're woven into our clinical encounters and our conversations. Our naturopathic guidelines on consent state the ability to direct one's own healthcare needs and treatment is vital to an individual's personal dignity and autonomy. A key component of dignity and autonomy is choice. Regulated health professionals hold a position of trust and power with respect to their patients and can often exercise influence over a patient. However, decision-making power must always rest with the patient. In 1996, Ontario passed the Healthcare Consent Act, a legal framework for documenting, communicating, establishing, and maintaining informed consent in all healthcare settings. Informed consent is required before all treatment can be administered, and treatment includes anything that is done for a therapeutic, preventative, palliative, diagnostic, cosmetic, or other health-related purpose, and includes a course of treatment, plan of treatment, or community treatment plan. So notice how I emphasize that community treatment plan aspect of things. Informed consent must be present in four key areas. The consent must relate to the treatment, the consent must be informed, the consent must be given voluntarily, i.e. made by the patient and under no coercion, pressure, or duress. And finally, the consent must not be obtained through misrepresentation or fraud. In order to obtain your full informed consent, you must be given the following information. 1. The nature of the treatment. 2. The expected benefits of the treatment. 3. The material risks of the treatment, no matter how small, especially if one of the risks or side effects is death. The risks should not be minimized for the purpose of influencing your decision making. The risks should be in relation to your health history. For example, if you suffer from cardiovascular disease, you should be made aware of the risk of blood clots or myocarditis or other health-related side effects or risks. And it should also be disclosed if certain risks remain unknown. 4, the material side effects of the treatment plan should be given to you. And again, these side effects should be explicitly stated, no matter how small or unlikely or infrequent. And if long-term side effects are unknown, that should also be stated. 5, alternative courses of action should also be stated. And finally, 6, the likely consequences of not having the treatment. So if you decide to forego the treatment that's being recommended, what would happen? But what is the likelihood of that happening? So these consequences should not be exaggerated, and they must be related to the particular patient at hand. So what is the actual risk to you, the patient, if you say no to this treatment? Not what is the risk in general, like based on your health history and your health goals, you know, what is the risk of you saying no to this? So if we look at this under the context of recommending magnesium to help with constipation, I would tell a patient, okay, I'm recommending 2 capsules of magnesium citrate and 300 milligrams before bed. I'm expecting this is going to help you have a bowel movement in the morning. And this is how magnesium works to help with gastric motility and to, you know, slightly soften stools. If your dose is high enough, one of the things you might experience are loose stools. If your dose is too high, you might feel drowsy, which may help, which, you know, may be something that you're after because it might help you sleep. You might notice some muscle relaxation, and you know, these are the risks. I mean, is there a risk of death from magnesium? It would be like a dose effect. Like there's a risk of death if you are overdosing virtually anything, including water. But, you know, that would be something, as long as you're following the recommended dose, there should be no risk of death. An alternate course of action is, you know, we could talk about other things that may help with constipation and why I'm recommending magnesium as the first course of action. And then 6, what would be the likely consequence of not taking magnesium? Well, you stay with the level of constipation that you're currently experiencing. So simple conversation woven into the treatment as you're describing it. Consent cannot be given in a state of duress or coercion. Healthcare providers must be aware that they hold a position of authority and may maintain a power imbalance. Patients may be scared to ask questions. You might not have time to really get enough information out of your healthcare provider, and you might not know what questions to ask, even if you do have time. So it's your doctor or your healthcare provider's duty to sit with you and make sure that you're aware of all the factors that a reasonable person would need to be aware of in order to make a choice. So your doctor, your healthcare provider must not misrepresent the benefits of treatment, and they must disclose any conflict of interest. They must also be fully aware and up to date on the research and what is known or unknown. Again, even if the risk of certain things are small, it still needs to be disclosed. Healthcare providers must ensure that patients are not acting under the pressure of someone else, such as an employer, a government agency, or family member, and are making this decision on their own. This is a key point. You still have a right to informed consent, even if your current situation makes it seem like you don't. And so I'm going to just leave you with this. The Informed Consent Guide for Canadian Physicians states, patients must always be free to consent to or refuse treatment, and be free of any suggestion of duress or coercion. Consent obtained under any suggestion of compulsion, either by the actions or words of the physician or others, may be no consent at all, and therefore may be successfully repudiated. In this context, physicians must keep clearly in mind that there may be circumstances when the initiative to consult a physician was not the patient's, but was rather that of a third party, a friend, an employer, or even a police officer. Under such circumstances, the physician may be well aware that the patient is only very reluctantly following the course of action suggested or insisted upon by a third person. Then, physicians should be more than usually careful to assure themselves that patients are in full agreement with what has been suggested, that there has been no coercion, and that the will of other persons has not been imposed on the patient. So I'm going to leave you with this. It's your body and it's your choice. You always have the right to do what's best for you. Whatever treatment we're talking about, whether it's a hysterectomy or magnesium before bed, true empowered health cannot come from a place of coercion or pressure. In the end, it's you that has to live with the risks and side effects of the treatment that you've chosen, or the benefits of it, or the consequences of not having chosen the treatment. It's you that has to deal with the results of your choice, and therefore it's fully your choice to make. So know that you always have a choice. Your doctor has a duty to inform you of your choice, as well as the information necessary for you to make the right choice for you, regardless of what you see happening in the media or in politics or around the world. Informed consent is your right, and it's the law. So thank you for listening, and have a great day.